not yet.
Senate Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Budget Division will come to order. Members, sorry we're late. We need to get rolling so we can try to finish the agenda today. We have, and I should mention that our non-general fund omnibus bill, we're going to do bill number 2, has a deadline of March 29th, which basically means by the end of next week we need to get that this bill with all non-general fund items of spending in it completed by the end of next week. So members, keep that in mind that we got to keep moving, and there's a lot of bills sitting in our committee that people want to have heard. So we need to try to get our work done, and we may have to add some extra committee time. So next week. So be prepared. We're going to start with Senator Saxhog's 2760. Is that where we're starting?
That's right, Madam Chair.
All right.
And I was just going to make the comment that those of us that live up in the woods, we don't have anything else to do when we're down here anyway, so we might as well be working.
Well, come on. There's lots to do here. You just need someone to show you
kidding.
Around. Come
well,
over
yeah,
to the
St.
carousel.
Patrick's Day is over. It's the best St. Patrick's Day I've ever seen in St. Paul.
Oh, that's good. Some of us didn't get to leave the building, so I don't know how you got to see it, Senator Saxhog.
All right. Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members. Senate File 2760, it's the annual DNR forestry bill, and with me is Bob Tomlinson from the DNR Division of Forestry to speak to the bill and help answer any questions. We have a fiscal note, too.
Do we have one of
those? Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, Bob Tomlinson, DNR Forestry. Do you want to just deal with that part of the bill that pertains to the fiscal impacts, which is just the one section?
Probably, I think, unless members have questions, I think we can safely do that. Most of us heard this in the policy committee.
So if you go to then section reoffering timber sales, I'm sorry, it was section, I think it still is section 4 in the bill. Mr. Mueller says it is. So, and we put together a fiscal note on this, and I apologize. I've got one that's about a week old, but I think it's still relevant here.
I believe it is still the current one.
And as I explained real briefly to you the other day, that we would anticipate that this would be a positive fiscal impact in that we would the issue here would be that we would look for the permission, if you will, from the legislature to reoffer unsold wood in certain situations where we think it would be necessary to help sell that wood at a lower cost than what it was initially appraised at, in order so that we can get the sites adequately regenerated and back in a healthy and productive state. So this situation might only occur on some of those sales that are not bought in the initial auction. They would not occur in ones where we thought we could wait for a couple of years for maybe a market to come back, or that the timber is in good enough condition that it could stand out there for another 5 years or so, that sort of a thing. But this would really be for those stands that are degrading and ones that we feel we need to get in and do a regeneration harvest on it sooner rather than later. And so the essence of the fiscal note would be that we would, number one, we might get some revenue in from those stands by selling the wood and at a lower cost, perhaps, but nevertheless selling it. And the other part of it, too, would be that we would then offset the cost of going out and doing some intensive site preparation, such as bulldozing and piling up and burning and that sort of a thing like that in order to regenerate the site. So with the two of those things combined, we estimate that the total cost savings to the state could be as much as $3 million. I think that's probably way on the high side, but nevertheless, we think it would be a positive impact, fiscal impact, and it would certainly help revenues for the state and help us reduce our costs as well. Do you want me to talk a little bit more about the details in Section 4 of the fiscal note?
In Section 4, and that's one.
Yeah, page 2, it talks about the fact that unsold timber, you know, of course, produces zero revenue. In fiscal year 9, our stumpage sales valued $18.2 million with 917,000 cords, where 80% of the volume offered sold at that. That means 20% did not sell at the appraised volume or value. 133,000 cords was that amount that we offered for sale but did not sell. And we are assuming here that if we reoffered to sell 50% of that, which a caution is maybe on the high side, but if we did that, the fiscal year 09 sales value is at maybe $9.90 per cord and 12 cords per acre. That's not a very high number of cords per acre, because, of course, these stands aren't very productive stands that we're talking about here, doing this on. And that would result in 133,000 cords over about 11,000 acres. So the average cost to contract removal and maintain, that would be about $150 per acre to go in and do the site preparation work. And that wouldn't count the cost of planting the trees. That would be an addition, but those are costs that were going to occur either way. So we did not include that in the fiscal note. That kind of shows you that we're looking at reducing the cost on one hand and bringing in some revenue, albeit much less revenue than we might otherwise, on the other hand, and having a positive impact.
And improving the forest.
And most importantly, improving the forest. Thank you, Senator Saxog, for that.
So these are actually savings. Do you want to comment on it? Mr. Mueller, I'm going to ask Mr. Mueller to comment.
Madam Chair and members, there's sort of two parts that we should look at, both the revenues that are expected to come in on this, and those would all, if you look at the front page of this fiscal note, would all, none of it would go to the general fund. It would be split between three different funds, the Forest Management Investment Fund, the Special Revenue Fund, and the Permanent School Fund. So that's one part of the fiscal note. And the second part, we have to kind of tie to what we did in the first budget cutting bill. Also, we did cut the Division of Forestry by, if I remember correctly, it's like 1.6 million or 1.4, something like that. So there is already a reduction to the Division of Forestry general fund operating dollars. And now, what I'd like to get a little clarification from the DNR is they're expecting this bill. If we look at the fiscal note on page 3, and I want to get them on record to say that this is less work that they would have to do or less expenditures that you would be incurring as a result of this.
Mr. Tomlinson.
That's what you said.
Madam Chair and members, I don't think this would be less expenditures. This is going to be, you know, if we go out and cruise the timber, we appraise it, we offer it, and it doesn't sell right now, then we may still try and regenerate the stand in different ways, and sometimes we may not. And if we don't, because there's no market or otherwise, then the stand stands there and further degrades. It would take more effort on our part to do what we're talking about doing here in this bill, but we feel that it's vitally important to the health of the stands in order to do that in certain places in the state.
But you're talking about these reductions here. The reductions that show up in the fiscal note under reduced expenditures, isn't that what that means? You're spending less staff time and money?
I think, Madam Chair and members, that the reductions we're talking about there would mostly related to contract work for site preparation to go in. I mentioned, you know, we'd have to contract with somebody to go in there and and do something, be it bulldozing and piling and burning or otherwise removing it for some other lesser product, that sort of a thing. I think most of those reductions would be associated with contract work, not necessarily with this, you know, staff time.
But it's either way, it's a reduction in spending within the division. So I think I'm understanding what Mr. Mueller is saying also is that we just don't want to double count this cut, that since we're already cutting the division in the regular budget, can those cuts absorb this reduction? Is that what you're saying? Or should it be added on to it?
Madam Chair and members, I think what I'm saying is that by passing this, this would help them absorb the cut we already gave them by allowing them to do less contract work. So this, I don't think, I mean, it would be up to the committee if we would want to take an additional $833,000 off their appropriation. But I think by maybe passing their, or putting or allowing them to do this, it makes their cut a little bit.
This could be part of the cut.
This would be part of the cut, not in addition to the cut that we already gave them.
Madam Chair,
at least for 1 year, it helps them absorb the reduction. And but I will say, we just gave them a reduction in the general fund. This would also reduce their costs in the FMIA, which is probably good because that account actually isn't doing so. It's kind of running at a deficit, too. But maybe Ms. Tomlinson.
Well, Mr. Tomlinson.
I think that theory would work well, but for the with the exception that what we would pay, we would use bonding money to pay for the thing that I described here, the site preparation work. So it wouldn't have anything to do with the general fund or the forest management investment account.
But you
the
show
bonding money is what's used for the site preparation and the planting of the trees now.
But this fiscal note signed by Mike Rollups shows a reduction in the general fund of $833,000. So that's what we're talking about. So is that the contract?
I would assume some of that would be general fund, but there is a fair amount of that would be bonding money as well.
We're trying to help you here.
Yeah, so. I understand that, and I appreciate that.
So if we can count that as part of your contribution to the budget reduction, that would help you, I would think, in meeting those general fund cuts. So we wouldn't have to track this as a separate cut in this bill.
Right.
It would already be part of the first cut. Is that right or not?
Well, Madam Chair, these are all the Division of Forestry all is funded by direct appropriations. So we already reduced their appropriations by, whatever, 1.6 or 1.4 in the other budget bill. So, yeah, unless we'd go in and reduce their appropriation further, according to this bill, we wouldn't track this less expenditure.
Right.
Because we're not reducing any appropriations.
We just authorize what your plan is.
What we would probably have to do, though, is book these revenues somewhere, track those along somewhere. And unless there's some statutory expenditures, but I don't think that would apply to this right now. But we wouldn't show any cost savings due to this bill, probably just the revenues, because we wouldn't be reducing any appropriations.
I think,
Mr. Tomlinson.
Madam Chair, members, I think that last statement is right on. That.
All right. Senator Frederickson? Okay. So, really, we're talking about the accounting, how we account for this, not the bill itself. So I'm not hearing any concerns about your plan. It sounds like a good plan.
Thank you.
Unless there's questions. All right. Anything else on that piece of it? We're good. Did you want to go through the, were there other pieces in here in this fiscal note, or is that the whole thing? That's pretty much
Section 3.
Oh, the fees? Where does that show up?
Okay. I don't think it shows up in there, but.
Okay, we're looking at Section 3 that relates to fees charged to owners receiving forest management services. Are those new fees?
Madam Chair, we've charged fees of private landowners for various things for a few decades. Of late, though, we started charging on December 1st for the preparation of stewardship plans. You didn't direct us at last year's legislature, but I think the discussion last year was that it would be a good thing for us to start charging those fees, and we had that ability already in 88.79, I believe it is. And so we came up with a system, we working with the stakeholders, including the private landowners, that need the stewardship plans for their property tax programs that they're participating in and for good forest management. and we began charging. My understanding is that the average cost is about just under $500 for a 100-acre plan, just on average. So far we've collected about $20,000, or as of a few weeks ago, we've collected $20,000 that was deposited into the account within, I believe it's in the special revenue account. Mm-hmm. And then our intention is to use that money to, as it builds up, to contract with private consultants to do yet more stewardship plans in the future and kind of try and have a revolving type of a situation there with that.
The goal here, Madam Chair, is that we have roughly one-third of the forests in Minnesota are small non-industrial. And we have these wonderful SFIA and other plans. We have great ways for these people to manage their forests, but they have to have a plan. And being undermanned at the DNR, people have to wait in line. So we would like to start charging and we want to, so that when we start doing that, the private sector will become more competitive in doing these forest plans, too. So we ultimately think that more people in Minnesota will end up with forest management plans because of this.
Okay. And, members, if you look at Section 3, it's not changing. The authority does exist already under current law. This just makes it, publishes it, and puts a structure to it a little bit.
Right.
So it doesn't change the fee collection numbers, per se. What is the notwithstanding 16A.1283 refer to? Is that what you're looking at?
I think that's the rules-making part of it.
Is that what it is?
Looking at
Madam Chair.
Mr. Knopf.
Madam Chair, what that refers to is the prohibition on agencies instituting new fees without specific legislative authorization.
I'm not sure why you even need that here, but because it already you have the ability to charge under current law, but whatever. Just to be on the safe side, is that the idea?
Well, Madam Chair, I think when they switched from charges to fees, I think they felt they needed to have that. It is kind of a belt and suspenders thing, but.
Okay. Okay. Any other questions, members? Senator Fredrickson, and then Bill.
Madam Chair, under that Section 3, I recall in similar sections of law, there was a phrase we put at the end of that exempting them specifically from a provision of the rules. Mr. Knopf is looking that up now. I don't know if it's necessary here or not. But.
Madam Chair, Senator Fredrickson, my only concern would be that this bill has not gone through state and local government. And I think by putting that exemption to rulemaking in, it would require it to go through state and local government. It may be something that the agency should look at maybe between now and next year is whether or not they'd have that authority to bypass rulemaking with this, because it doesn't explicitly state that in here. Because it does talk about a written order published in the state register, so we are kind of exempting them from that anyways. But they may want to look at language that we've adopted in other areas for DNR with that specifically on the rules for fees.
To me, it seems like overkill since we already authorized you to charge the owners. It's really just a small change.
Well, Madam Chair, the issue is when you start calling something a fee instead of a charge. It's, you know, we've got all these statutes that refer to fees and not to charges.
And Madam Chair, I can almost remember the phrase that we typically put in that, but I can't quite. It's notwithstanding clause 4 of.
But we don't want this bill to go to another committee.
Right.
Well, Senator Saxog doesn't look like he's all that busy. I don't know.
Yeah, except this probably will be in my bill.
Madam Chair, I'm going to be in state and local tomorrow anyway. You know, no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, that's true. You can zoom over there tomorrow. I don't know. Senator Dill.
Yeah, Madam Chair, if I could ask a question to the DNR on the first page of the bill on lines 1.24. It says a permittee shall remain with the fire at all times, and before leaving the site shall completely extinguish the fire. You know, I've had quite a bit of experience burning brush piles of elm and box elder and willow and so forth, and these big piles of brush you wind up with when you're cleaning out ditches or trying to clear some land, usually they don't burn that well. And it takes several days for it to burn. You got to keep tending, you know, pushing it together, and it's gets to be quite a project. I'm just wondering if you expect those that have this situation to sleep out there each night and watch watch these big logs smolder overnight.
Madam Chair, Senator Dillon and members, you know, we would expect that burning continue to be done in a safe and effective manner, so that we, under this new permit system that some of the counties may opt to choose to do. Certainly, if it's a running fire through grass, you know, where they're burning out the ditches and things like that, it's pretty important to have folks out there tending it on a, probably on a pretty constant basis, I would guess. And likewise, you know, in perhaps some other situations, but in the kind of situation that you described, I think that that's the type of thing that on a county-by-county basis, they'll make the decision themselves that it may be okay to burn a brush pile to start it up and to be within, you know, sight of it, but maybe not be standing around it necessarily the whole time. You know, common sense, I think, you know, is what we look for and hope that we continue to do it in very safe, effective ways like we've done in the past.
So. Senator Dill, that's what they always tell us about our campfires. So.
Well, Madam Chair, members, I'm glad to hear the word common sense being used, and thank you for that answer, because it makes me feel better now when I have this brush pile burning out there in the middle of a plowed field several hundred yards from the nearest additional dry vegetation. And it's just one of those things where it takes time to get a heavy log or a heavy pile of brush really burned up. And I wouldn't want to be out there trying to put it out at night and starting it up the next morning.
And, Madam Chair, Senator Dill, Mr. Thompson just whispered in my ear, do we have to define common sense?
Probably.
Madam Chair, Senator Dill,
I was
thinking
Fredrickson.
If you brought a bag of marshmallows, you could probably get a grandchild or nephew and niece to sit on there with you.
Yeah, there you go.
Good idea.
Sounds like fun. Okay. I think we're making good progress on this bill, and maybe we should quit while we're ahead here. All right, Senator Sattok.
Yeah, if there's no further questions, I'd move the 27-6 to be recommended to pass and sent to finance. Full finance?
I think this one probably should stay in our omnibus bill. So, because we do have a fiscal note on it.
Oh, okay.
Is that what you're
going
to say?
All right.
So I think I'd like to keep it in the committee.
That'll be fine.
So Senator Saxhog moves that 2760, we did not amend it, the first engrossment be laid on the table for inclusion in the omnibus bill. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you. Do you want to do your other bill now, Senator Saxhog?
Yes, that'd be great, Madam Chair. This one's Senate File 2821.
Go ahead,
and
please.
It deals with ATV provisions. The first part of the bill deals with clarifying when a person can use an ATV during deer hunting season. And the remaining sections of the bill change some of the provisions related to youth operation of an ATV. So with me today is Jonathan Bowen, ATV AM, to give brief testimony. And I also have Ron Parra from the DNR to help explain the amendment and answer any questions. The amendment ultimately will be served up by, I'm hoping, by Senator Bach.
You're looking for this one.
Yeah. All right, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, my name is Jonathan Bone. I'm here representing the All-Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota, as well as the Amateur Riders Motorcycle Association, District 23. I would just like to ask you, would you like me to stick to the pertinent fiscal parts of the bill or go through the bill in its entirety?
I think you can just stick to the fiscal impact.
Okay, great. There's only one section that has any fiscal impact, and that's section 4, starting on line 3.33, with the language change on lines 4.20 and 4.21. Last year, the legislature passed a non-resident trail pass for all-terrain vehicle use in the state. And what we are doing here is simply changing it so that if a non-resident is riding on a machine that is currently registered in the state of Minnesota, they don't have to be in possession of a non-resident trail pass. So last year, the fiscal note on the non-resident trail pass, I believe, was $90,000. DNR hasn't collected any of that money yet. It went into effect on January 1st. So there's a minor fiscal impact on that, just because it does exempt some non-residents who will be riding on registered machines.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Bohm. Yeah. Do we have someone from the DNR just to speak briefly to this and let us know what the fiscal impact is, if any?
Madam Chair, Ron Potter with the Parks and Trails Division. The impact we feel would be very minor. I don't know if we could do a fiscal note on it at this point. Basically, they're paying $15 a year if they're registered, and it's $20 a year for the pass. And like Jonathan said, we've just put this in place, so we don't know how many non-resident passes we're even going to be selling.
Okay. All right. Other questions from the committee? So we don't have a fiscal note. I think this one could probably travel on its own.
Madam Chair, we have an amendment. I think Senator Bach was going to present it.
Okay.
Madam Chair, of the A5 amendment I'd like to offer.
Within our packets?
I was going to say, I don't know what your amendment is here, but this won't be a vehicle for all kinds of controversial amendments on the floor, I would hope.
I'm actually offering this on behalf of Senator Tomasoni. This is in his district for a trail that would connect up to the Iron Range ATV park.
And Madam Chair, Mr. Potter is here to explain that too. So,
all right, Mr. Potter.
I haven't seen the amendment yet, but I believe I know that what it's about. It's reestablishing $100,000 out of the ATV appropriation. This was appropriated 2 years ago, and it was a one-time appropriation. And it's matched by a federal trail grant. The club wasn't able to get the work done in time, so what we'd like to do is just reappropriate this money until it's spent, so they have time to get the project completed.
So, Mr. Potter, and I'll give you a chance to read it to make sure that there's nothing you're not expecting in the language. But did the money just cancel back, or just was never sent out to the club?
Madam Chair, it canceled back.
Okay. Is this pretty much the same language as it was before?
Madam Chair, it appears to be exactly as it was before, except that the last line said one time only, and now it says available until spent.
Okay. Do you think they'll be able to spend it in the next 2 years, or...?
They have a two-year head start on it, so, Madam Chair, I believe so.
Okay. All right. Any discussion on the A5 amendment? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Now we have to keep it. I think we'll keep this bill now just because we need to track all the dollars that are being spent and received in this bill. So.
Madam Chair, I would move that Senate File 2821 as amended be recommended to pass and be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus.
On that motion, would anyone else like to be heard on this bill? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Saxon. All right, Senator Kubley, are you ready? Senator Kubley, on Senate File 2541. No, sorry. Yes.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Go ahead, please.
Oh, I thought you were saying you'd made an error in stating the number.
I believe that. I said it right.
Okay.
When I'm not wearing my glasses, I'm kind of guessing a lot.
Well, Madam Chair and members, this this bill would exempt from registration those vehicles that are owned by tribal governments in the state of Minnesota. You'll notice from the bill that other, you know, political subdivisions are already exempt, and the tribal communities are seeking the same exemption. You know, it's a pretty simple bill, Madam Chair. The DNR had raised the issue of boats not being able to be exempt under federal statute, and I had offered to present their amendment, but now the tribes are requesting that not be offered. So I'm kind of at a loss as to which way to go here, Madam Chair.
All right. Senator Kubley, I just want to make sure I understand the language here where it says in these phrases, or by an Indian tribal government to a member. Does that mean they don't have to register it?
I believe that came from a specific tribe, Madam Chair, and I understand that they already do that. But that practice was also being questioned by the DNR. Maybe if there's a DNR representative present that could address that question, that would be better, Madam Chair.
Sure. Okay. Who would like to come up from the DNR on this one? Mr. Potter? Welcome back.
Madam Chair.
Can you speak to the fiscal note as well? It's very minimal.
Yeah, there's not much. Yeah, the fiscal note is pretty minimal, Madam Chair.
Yeah, Madam Chair, when we worked up the fiscal note, I think we were assuming that it was applying to the tribal governments and not necessarily the members. I asked our folks today in the License Bureau if they could run a number for me on how many that would be, and we really don't have any way to come up with that number on how many tribal members currently register. So it would be very difficult to come up with an accurate fiscal note on this.
Okay. It is a little confusing because I understand why you want the tribal governments want to be treated the same as state or other political subdivisions, but members... any tribal member wouldn't have to register regardless of where they live? Is that what the bill does? Oh, Mr. Asuma, maybe you can help us.
Madam Chair, Randy Asuma, mm-hmm. representing Leech Lake. The problem is Leech Lake has seen this as for many, many years, they've issued their own boat licenses, ATV licenses, snowmobile licenses, their own stickers on the reservation. Currently, they issue their own driver's license plates. And we see nothing really different than that.
Okay. And those.
And that's why we're asking for the exemption. Just
okay.
to spell it out clearly.
All right, so we don't really know if this would be expanded to other tribal members and other tribes. I guess that would be the question in terms of lost registration fees. That's all we're trying to understand in this committee is what would be the fiscal impact of losing those registrations potentially. But maybe we're just talking about the status quo.
Well, currently...
Mr. Asuma.
Currently, Madam Chair, They don't have that. They buy a state trail sticker when they're using a snowmobile trail, da-da-da, you know. But as far as their license, their stickers on their watercraft has been allowed forever.
So probably what you're saying is tribal members generally might have both. A Minnesota, they may in some cases have
sure.
a Minnesota registration and a tribal one, and this may not change that.
That's correct.
Mr. Knopf?
Well, Madam Chair, this would exempt them from state registration. So
okay.
if they have the tribal registration, they would not need state registration.
For any of these areas? Okay.
Right.
Madam Chair?
Senator Fredrickson.
I'm wondering if that could be stated a little more plainly in this clause. I don't have a way of doing it.
In each, I mean, it's repeated all throughout.
On line 14. Now, we understand what it means here, but somebody present
historically
reading it for the first time might not understand it.
Yeah, I think it's the phrase is just a little unclear to me what it meant. So I think that's a good idea if you can think of a way to say it differently. Or
well,
registered by, why wouldn't it say by an Indian tribal government or by a member? I'm not doing that right.
No.
I'll let you think about some language. Do you have a suggestion, Mr. Knopf?
Madam Chair, it's I guess it's pretty clear to me, but because it says if you look at 110, it says registration is not required for off-highway motorcycles, and you look at two registered, and there are two clauses there in another state or country that's within the state for more than 30 consecutive days, or if it's registered by an Indian tribal government to a member. You could say to a member of the tribe, you know, if you wanted to clarify that, but I don't know that adds much.
Okay. Well. Madam Chair, you could say, thank you, Madam Chair, you could say something at the end of that, I was going to say prepositional phrase, but it's not that, but you could say, as has been the case historically, or something to that effect, I don't know.
Madam Chair, if you wanted to, in each case, if you wanted to fix, to make it maybe a little bit clearer, put it into items. We could, after registered, insert a colon and then insert a Romanet 1 and then put a semicolon on, instead of the comma on 1.14 and put Romanet 2 so it might make it easier to read. That would be a suggestion.
All right. Well, let's think on it here. Senator Chaudhry.
Yes, Madam Chair. Would it help to say at the end where something to the effect of where a sticker has already been purchased? Does that address the concern to make sure that they've already purchased a sticker and don't have to duplicate it?
But this would apply prospectively as well. So I'm not sure.
Madam Chair, I thought I heard that the point is that we're trying not to have someone buy a sticker twice,
mm-hmm.
once for a tribe and one for state.
Yes.
So something to the effect of where a registration has already been purchased by the tribe, something like that. Then I had another question, Madam Chair.
It's already registered.
Yeah.
Senator
Madam
Chaudhry.
Madam Chair, Mr. Asuma or whoever can answer, is it possible that a tribal government member in Minnesota could be a member of a tribe in Minnesota could be a resident of another state?
I suppose it's possible.
And if so, should we clarify that this applies to members who are residents of Minnesota?
I think that's fine.
So otherwise, would they have to get a non-resident license or registration?
Well, under this, if
they... In Minnesota?
Madam Chair, under the way it's written, a tribal member who lives in another state would not have to buy any type of state sticker, even though they don't even... So they would be totally exempted from any non-resident fees.
But they'd still have to buy the tribal sticker.
Right.
So I think what this is saying, I just, after reading it a little more carefully, I think it basically says if you buy the tribal sticker, you don't have to buy any other state stickers. And I think that would apply whether you live in Minnesota or don't live in Minnesota. But, okay, who is?
Madam Chair, I would maybe we should consider confining the privilege to
sticker,
just Minnesota
state
residents.
These are not
All right, we can think about that. Who is next? Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Kubley, or I don't know who can answer this, but maybe the The registration fee, the sticker cost, how much is that, and what does that cost go to? Why do we collect the fee?
Mr. Potter.
Madam Chair, Senator, it's the registration fee for an ATV, for example, is $15 a year. It's $45 for 3 years. Snowmobile is I think most of them are about the same, that same price. And that money goes to maintaining the trail system in the state, both the grant and aid program and the state system.
And
Senator Hahn.
Madam Chair, so the stickers that the Indian tribal governments issue to their members, do the Indian tribal governments then donate that fee or that portion of the fee to the state of Minnesota for accomplishing these purposes?
Mr. Potter.
Madam Chair, Senator Hemp, not that I'm aware of.
And so, Madam Chair, I guess that I'm not sure if I understand what the logic is of why, if we are saying that people who use these facilities in the state should be charged a fee for a registration to help maintain and govern the trail system, why should certain citizens, say, be exempt from that fee if they're using those trails? I'm not sure if I understand the logic, unless the tribal government is collecting the fee on our behalf and then remitting it to us, which apparently that's not happening. Am I understanding that correctly?
That's, Madam Chair, that's correct.
So, Madam Chair, I guess I think we need to understand why certain citizens should be exempt from the fee and others have to pay it.
Senator Chaudhry.
Madam Chair, Senator Hahn, I think the premise of the bill is that we do this exemption for all sorts of other types of licensures. And so this is one area where it does not, it's not uniform in that respect. And so they're trying to bring the same thing into uniformity. We do the same thing is done with driver's licenses, license plates. I think, did you say personal watercraft? And is boats as well? So this is just one anomaly in the system where we have recognized that if you pay registration within the tribal reservation, that you shouldn't have to pay it again when you leave the border.
Well, Mr. Madam Chair,
Senator Hahn, if you come from another state with a registered motorcycle or whatever the other categories are, snowmobile, et cetera, then you don't have to pay the license fee in Minnesota to use the trails. So the idea is it's a different jurisdiction, and we're recognizing their fees without requiring them to necessarily contribute to the pot of money.
Well, and Madam Chair,
Senator Hahn.
I understand that. I think that the anomaly is that if we have, as a state, are paying through user fees the maintenance of a certain system, then I understand why we would not want to have governmental bodies pay that fee, and I think that makes sense. But it doesn't make sense to me to have certain citizens be excluded from that based on their membership in a tribe or whatever that circumstance might be. It may be an anomaly, but maybe we should rethink the other part of that anomaly and say maybe that needs to be redressed. If there's a purpose for the fee, then people who use the system ought to, I think, contribute to the maintenance of it. I don't know what the fee that's collected by is a tribal government fee being used to maintain trails in tribal lands. I don't know. Is that what the logic is? Is that something that can be addressed?
Madam Chair, Senator Hahn, yes, I believe that is the case. Also, I'd point out that the chair pointed out a state, another country. I believe if somebody from Canada or Wisconsin came over here, they've got 30 days before they have to purchase a Minnesota registration. And I stated earlier that with respect to snowmobiles and ATVs, tribal members do buy, because of lack of a lot of trails, they use the state trails, and they all purchase state trail stickers.
And I guess I would think that these registrations are used for some other purposes besides, I mean, the revenue is used for the trails primarily, but there's also an enforcement mechanism where there's violations of use of the various trails. The registration is used to help enforce those, keep track of violators. So that does serve a government function.
One question, Mr. Suma. If I am on a trail and go through a reservation, do I have to purchase a reservation registration?
Do you know, Mr. Suma?
I don't know the answer to that. I guess I've never been asked that.
Madam Chair, if you're a tribal member, you would.
But if you're not a tribal member visiting,
I don't think visitors would be required, as was my understanding. Visiting with them.
So, Madam Chair, it's almost a reciprocity.
Yes, I think you're right, Senator Chaudhry. All right. I think we understand this. Are there any? Does anyone have a proposed language change? Well, I think I'm comfortable with it, but Mr. Knopf.
Well, Madam Chair, if you wanted to address Senator Chaudhry's concerns about it being a resident, again, as I stated earlier, I think we could split these into items. Item number one would be in another state or country. Item number two, by an Indian tribal government, and I was going to expand that to say to a Minnesota resident who is an enrolled member of the tribe. And do that in each place where this occurs within the bill. I mean, if you wanted to do that.
I don't think it's necessary.
Someone doesn't have a sticker. We have to check and see.
Anyone want to move that, or should we just?
Madam Chair, I think the language is clear the way it is. I really do.
Senator Hand.
Madam Chair, so as I understand this, then if someone who is a DNR agent and sees someone without a registration. In order to enforce this, they would have to get proof that the person was a member of an enrolled tribe. Is that how the enforcement would work?
Well, they'd have a sticker from the tribe, I assume, that they still would have to have some kind of identification on the vehicle. That would be a registration, just like a Minnesota registration would be.
Madam Chair, is that Senator a requirement of the law that they have to have a tribal registration?
Yes. I think that's what we're saying, that if they have a registration by the tribe, then they don't have to have a separate Minnesota registration. So they have to be registered by the tribe or the state to be able to use one of these vehicles in Minnesota.
And, Madam Chair, I was reading the language to say that the exemption was either to a government or to a member. It's not clear that it means that that person has to have a registration from the tribe. Is that?
Yes, it is.
Is that? That may be the understanding, but I don't know that this statute requires that.
Oh, I think where it says on paragraph 2, okay, registration is not required for off-highway motorcycles registered in another state or country or registered by an Indian tribal government to a member. So that took me a while to get my head around that sentence, but I think that's what it says. That so it's not required under Minnesota law if it's registered by an Indian tribal government to a member, that particular vehicle.
Why don't you just insert registered after or so it's crystal clear.
Or registered by.
Yeah, that's
a good idea. I think that would really make it a little clearer. Senator Chaudhry?
I'll move that.
So do you want to just insert that everywhere it says or by an Indian tribal government to a member, you insert the word registered after the word or. Does that make sense? Okay, I see some nods. Any discussion on that amendment? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. All right. Senator Kubley, this seems to have a minimal fiscal note as well, so I think we can let this bill just go if you'd like to take it to the floor, or you can leave it in our omnibus bill. Your choice.
I don't have a strong preference, Madam Chair. You'd rather not make the decision. Send it to the floor. That's fine.
You have a live companion in the House, I presume?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Well, then why don't we just let it go. So Senator Kubley moves that Senate File 2541, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the floor. All in favor? Or to finance. On that motion, all in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Chaudhry.
What's going to call finance?
Yeah. Finance, yeah. No, I always forget that. So you have to read with me.
Well, now you've
Registered.
an effective problem. It makes sense now to do it that way.
Senator Chaudhry, Senate File 3044.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 3044 received extensive testimony in the Policy Committee a week or so ago. It is a bill that was brought to me by Minnesota Anglers and their supporting organizations after a great deal of discussion, actually spanning over several years. It raises the fishing license fee by $4 in next year, and then another $4 4 years after that, and raises the non-residential license fee as well. It dedicates some of the money to youth fishing, allowing all of our youth to fish for free, as well as stocking efforts, and then also allows licensed agents to charge another dollar for the services that they provide to sell licenses. Over the past several years, the Citizens Budget Oversight Committee of the Game and Fish Fund has recommended in writing on two occasions raising the fishing license fee. In this year's last DNR roundtable, the question of raising the fishing license fee, as well as the future of the Game and Fish Fund and its solvency, was a source of extensive discussion at the annual conference of sportsmen hosted by the DNR. There was strong consensus, in fact, unanimity, that the fishing license fee should be raised. A proposal was brought forth by Anglers for Habitat along the lines in this bill. But before I introduce the bill, I nonetheless tried to vet the issue amongst Minnesota anglers, asking them by the news media, via blogging, via radio shows. We need to know what Minnesota anglers think about raising the license. By and large, the answer was yes, it should be raised, particularly for two reasons. One, it hasn't been raised in almost a decade, and the Game and Fish Fund in 2013 is going to go into the red. That was actually before the February forecast. Since the February forecast, we've learned that the Game and Fish Fund has about $1 million less, and that we could go into the red even earlier than 2013. The other reason is that that there has been, over the past several years, there's been this perennial discussion of the imbalance between the Game and Fish Fund spending on wildlife issues versus fishery issues. There's a lot of consternation amongst hunting groups that the hunting fees are going to supplement fishing activities more and disproportionately than they probably should. Not that there should be a hermetic seal between the two, but the trend has been an increase in hunting fees going towards fishery instead of wildlife activities. And then most of all, the continual funding shortages and cuts we're seeing in fishery programming, whether it be stocking, whether it be issues such as getting young people more involved in fishing, such as the Minocqua program, and other efforts that we're able to do less and less of. Our dollars just aren't going as far as they used to. Given the consensus, in my view, amongst anglers that we ought to raise the fishing fee towards certain purposes, I feel that this year is probably our best chance not only to raise the fee, because we seem to be so unified for it, but we need to plan for the Game and Fish Fund going into the red of the next couple of years. One concern that has been brought up consistently with raising the fishing license fee amongst anglers is knowing where the money is going to go. And that's why I've elicited two very specific purposes for the fee. Not that it's going to eat up all of the money, but I think the purposes of getting more children into angling and increasing our stocking efforts is two directives for the money that have seen wide support. And I think there's great comfort in knowing where much of this money is going to go. You have a fiscal note before you, and it shows an increase in revenue. I want to mention that as you read the fiscal note, I think there are some very conservative assumptions. Number one is an assumption that there will be a decrease in license sales. That may or may not be the case. The DNR has done some modeling in the past, but it does not take into account the fact that we actually have a safety valve system in Minnesota. That's the conservation license, where if you want to fish, you can pay pay two-thirds of the cost of a regular license. So that is not part of the DNR's modeling, and they will testify to that. I don't know how you would model this, but it doesn't take into account that the increased amount of fishermen and women we can get into the system by reducing barriers when they're 16 and 17 years old. I think that's a very important feat that we're accomplishing with this bill, and I think will help produce more licensed purchasers in the future. I don't criticize anyone for not modeling that in. That's a difficult thing, but I just want to emphasize that when we're saying we're only bringing in $964,000 the first year and $1.7 the following years, I think that's a conservative estimate. And I should also add that in any modeling of initial decreases in license sales, we see that generally as temporary, and that goes up in later years as people become more socially accustomed to paying the fee. We're amongst the lowest license fees in the region. We will still be, and I think this is the time to get this done. I don't think we should wait until 2012 or 2013 when we're in the red to address a crisis. I think this is good planning. And got some witnesses that can speak to this bill.
All right. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lance Ness. I'm the current president of Anglers for Habitat, and we want to thank Senator Shadway for bringing forward this bill. We support the bill. In testimony in previous committee, some adjustments were made, and we're a little concerned now that the increase wasn't quite what we wanted to get to. So we just wanted to point that out. I think the DNR will speak to that subject. We did not increase the non-resident fishing licenses, and that we may want to do that. That's a suggestion we'd like to bring forward to the committee to keep this balance in place. So we'll just want to get that. I have a couple of our members that have come from a long ways away to be with us today, and I'd like to let them speak on behalf of the bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ness. Slide off.
Madam Chair, my name is Jim Lilienthal. I'm the Resource Technical Advisory Chair for Anglers for Habitat, and I'm speaking in favor of adopting this bill. It's a step in the right direction towards improving and at the very least maintaining the core of our fisheries activities that are suffering right now. There's right now it's at minus 30 positions, and that's a big decrease in manpower at a time when there's so many critical things that the state is facing, and in fish management and in the management especially of our water and habitat. Anglers for Habitat has made a mission to support DNR fisheries and its some of its requests and visions for the future. At the last roundtable, there was a paper put out by the Minnesota DNR Fisheries that said fish habitat vision. We're very concerned that the loss of program money, that right now fisheries has to deal mainly with just maintaining core activities, and that's what I wanted to stress. If we're going to be able to handle our future problems that we've got to look at increasing these revenues somewhat. And deer hunters have expressed to us their concern of the $3 to $4 million per year of their license dollars, which is the main cash cow for DNR Fish and Wildlife right now, that is going to try to balance the account for fisheries. With that, I thank you.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Vern Wagner. I'm Vice President, Anglers for Habitat. And what I'd like to contribute here is my experience in talking about this bill with anglers. Because there's always going to be a question, are people going to be upset about this? And I've talked to a few who are. And I've talked to many, many more who say $4? Only $4? Why don't we raise it more? Do you know how much a box of leeches costs? And I explained to them, you know, I say, this license has not been increased for 10 years. This will be the first increase in 10 years. And then they say, yeah, well, it's about time. So I guess I'm not hearing the opposition. There is some. There are folks who don't like government and don't like fees, and they think the DNR should just do without, and I understand that. And I think the DNR is down 31 positions right now, unfilled in fisheries, and those probably won't be replaced, even if we pass this increase. But what it'll mean is that next year there won't be 62 unfilled positions, and in 2 or 3 years, 100 unfilled positions. So we sportsmen have always paid their way. But I'd like you to consider the fact that this fund is not getting any general fund dollars, and every dollar that I, as a fisherman, spends on a license, there is a matching federal dollar that comes back, not a 100% match, but there's matching dollars that come back to the DNR through the sales tax, federal sales tax. It's Pittman, Robertson, and Wallop Broll. So it's a good investment for me because of the extra dollars. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wagner. Do you have any concerns about the removal of the fee for the 16, 17-year-olds and that lack of revenue that would create?
Madam Chair, committee members, we're trying to open the front door to fishing. There was a time, and I said this last week when we testified, so I don't mean to be redundant, but there was a time when you turned 16 and you got that license, that was a big deal. You got your driver's license, you got your own fishing license. However, in the past 40 or 50 years, it's become the rite of passage now is your first Nintendo, your first Xbox, your first Wii Station. So what we're looking to do by taking the fee off of 16 and 17-year-olds is to remove that barrier that they have to go out and get a license, that this is a group of individuals who are more spontaneous in their actions than they are planned in their actions. So this would allow them to jump in someone's boat, to be taken fishing, to go with a buddy, and not have to worry about the fact that they don't have a license. The second part of this strategy is that this is a declining demographic. We're seeing fewer and fewer kids in these age groups purchasing licenses. So what we need to do, in our opinion, is we need to do something to lower the threshold to get into the sport and widen that front door. The lost revenue would be made up by, in the bill that we have before you, would be made up if we added a $4 to the non-resident fee. That's a fee that we hadn't really touched in this bill. But if we bumped that up $4, that would cover that lost revenue. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Chaudhry, why don't you go after the non-resident fees also in this bill?
Madam Chair, and the reason behind that was that we have raised non-resident fees, fishing fees, more recently than we have the resident fees. So I only bumped that up in my proposal 50 cents. At the same time, I think Mr. Wagner makes a fair point. And so if that's something the committee wants to discuss because of the fiscal impact, I'm fine with it. If it was to be raised $4, we would still be our non-resident license would still be a fair amount below other states' non-resident licenses.
And I
for that to go towards kids fishing for free, I think that's a pretty good moral argument.
Well, we'll hear from the DNR about how all of these things would affect the long-term health of the fund. And I guess, Senator Chaudhry, I have to say, and to your witnesses, I mean, I agree with you that we need to raise the fishing license fees. It needs to be done, and over the long term, over the next few years, we have a problem in the Game and Fish Fund. And my only reluctance is this year. I'd rather wait a year, and the reason for that is, you know, boy, it's tough out there. It's just really tough. At the other committee, I talked about, you know, people who are going to food shelves, and there's a lot more of them than there were a couple years ago, and raising fees at a time that we're going to be cutting government services because of the budget deficit in a deep recession, that's the only thing that gives me pause right now, and so I'm just thinking about whether this is something that has to happen right now. I think it has to happen. It's just a matter of when.
Madam Chair, just on that, I'm not proposing that this happen right now. I'm proposing that it happen next year.
You're correct, but if we vote for it right now, everyone's going to think it happened right now because that's what the news will say.
The other thing is to remember, if you take a look at the fiscal note, because of the way fishing license sales work, you sell the majority of your fishing licenses between the opener and June 30th. And so you're getting only 60% of your revenue in that fiscal year. So that's why FY11, you're only seeing $964,000. And you're only seeing the full amount the following years. If we delay it another year, you're looking at fiscal year 2012 getting the $964,000 and then only getting the full 1.7 under this in fiscal year 13. This is the time when the Game and Fish Fund is scheduled to go into the red. And I just want to reiterate that these activities no longer have general fund money. We've zeroed them all out. That's another important reason why we need to deal with it this year.
Thank you.
Plus, not to mention the fact that we have this kind of social, you know, unification behind this movement. I think now is the time to do it.
Okay. So, Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Chaudhry, I've always been supportive of fish stocking. I'm just wondering why on lines 2.8, if the intent is 2.7 and 2.8, if the intent is to get 10% of the additional revenue into fish stocking, why wouldn't we require them to actually buy fry and fingerlings with the money? If you put it into the program, we're likely just going to pay somebody's salary, and it's not necessarily going to get additional fry or fingerling into the water. It seems to me if we're going to commit money to stocking, let's commit it to buying fingerlings or buying fry, because the way it's worded, you might not stock one additional lake. You just might pay one more person. My concern, I don't think there's any guarantee there that it's actually going to stock an additional lake the way it's currently drafted.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, I don't have a problem with that suggestion.
And then, well, Senator Bach.
And then, Madam Chair, I can't stay much longer, but I would like to know what the governor's position is on these fee increases. I think that would be helpful. I'm a little reluctant to just vote for them and find out later that I took a vote that's going to anger some of my constituents when the governor's not going to be willing to sign the bill.
Good question, Senator Bach. Shall we bring the DNR up? Or, Senator Hand, did you have a question for these witnesses?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. Just a curiosity, the fee for taking fish by spearing from a dark house, and I'm not I've never speared fish, so I don't know what the difference between a dark house and a lighthouse. Well, I know what a lighthouse is, but I'm assuming we're not talking about that. But why is that fee being cut or reduced and all the others are going up?
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, and Shall Senator Hahn, this was a source of extensive discussion during the policy committee. It was raised, and I thought it was a fair point that was, and Senator Ingebrigtsen made the motion to change it, was that we have certain add-on kind of stamps and endorsements. You buy a $10 trout stamp, for example, in addition to the fishing license fee. For spearing, it was raised, and the concern that, well, they have to buy effectively two licenses, and that by making this change, you're basically making it a spearing endorsement, just like the others. It was a kind of a justice issue as well as economic.
Thank you,
Senator Bach.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, I spent a lot of time out on the water in my life, and you can look in my office and see I like to play outside. I still have some concern in DNR about the fact that it doesn't seem like the divisions work very well across jurisdictions. And just an example, having been out on the water not that many years ago, I was out fishing, and a DNR fisheries person came up to me and was doing a creel survey. So they wanted some scales off of the head of the walleyes that I did not have on my stringer because I did not have one. So, but what I find a little interesting about that is, why didn't that fisheries person ask to check my license? I mean, why is there not more work across jurisdictions in the department? Now, another boat might have come an hour later to check my fishing license. I just can't get my arms around why the different divisions over at DNR can't multitask. So, Senator Chaudhry, I'm not sure that we can't find a way to create some more efficiencies within the department. I think all of us at this table understand there's kind of a new normal out there. We're going to have to figure out how we do things more efficiently. And, Senator Chaudhry, I'm not as convinced at DNR that we are working cross jurisdiction in our divisions as well as we can, just from my own personal experiences.
Chair Senator Bach, I agree. And we're going to need to do that in addition to this bill. This bill doesn't solve the big picture problem. It goes a fair way towards addressing it. But it's a piece of what we're going to need to do. And my committee has spent a fair amount of time examining what we can do better in natural resource management, and that's exactly what we talk about, is how we eliminate the silo mentality amongst our managers.
All right, let's bring the DNR up. Thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate it. Is it Mr. Shad going to testify? Mr. Meyer, are you going to start then?
It's been Madam Chair, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. I certainly can, though I'm just here probably to help answer questions more than anything else. So
maybe we should ask you Senator Bach's question. Do we think the governor would support the increased fishing license fees?
Madam Chair, members, I am not sure. We have not had a communication with the governor's office on this. I certainly can have that conversation and get back to you on this. We did not, as I stated previously in the policy committee, the department is neutral on the license fee increase at this time. We evaluated bringing a license fee increase forward through our preliminary or supplemental budget process, but looking at the balances in the account and the other things that we were dealing with at the time, we chose not to do that through the supplemental budget process this year. But we do recognize the need that the license fee increase will need to take place at some time.
I think that should be. It would be helpful if we could try to get some kind of commitment from the governor's office.
Madam Chair, I will do my best to get an answer to that question as soon as possible for you.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Shad.
Madam Chair, committee members, Dave Shad, Fish and Wildlife Director with Department of Natural Resources, and maybe I can just talk briefly to the status of the Game and Fish Fund and some of the aspects of the fiscal note that you have before us. As has been mentioned, the balance in the Game and Fish Fund is declining. Right now, we're spending about $3 million more annually than we're bringing in with revenues from the fund. That's fairly typical for how this fund has been managed. Typically, in the early years after a license fee increase, we would typically bring in more revenue than we would be expending from the fund. And then as inflationary pressures eat away at that, at some point we begin to spend more than we're bringing into revenue. And as I mentioned, at this point, we're spending about $3 million more annually than we're bringing in through revenue. The balance in the account at the end of FY11 is projected to be about $10 million. And again, at current levels of spending, this wouldn't allow for any new initiatives in the next biennium or to fund any inflationary costs to our programs. We'd expect that balance would decline to about $4 million at the end of 2013. And that's really a dangerously low level. It's there's a lot of uncertainty in these projections. There's projections here for both license sales and also federal revenue that's derived from excise taxes and on arms and ammunition and angling equipment. And depending on what happens with the economy, both license sales and equipment purchases could either go up or down. And so getting to a balance less than $5 million, there's some risk associated with that. As Commissioner Meyer mentioned, we did take a close look at that. We felt that we probably could go another year here without a fee increase. But at some point, if we hope to maintain these programs and provide the opportunities that come with them, we will need to look at a fee increase. A couple of aspects to the fiscal note. First of all, exempting kids of age 16 and 17 from purchasing licenses, we estimate about 32,000 of those kids from our ELS database. That's a pretty solid number. And so the revenue loss there is about $650,000. But what's also indicated there is that because they would no longer be purchasing licenses, we could not count them as a license buyer as we compete for federal dollars from the Dingell Johnson and Wallop Breaux Fund. And so we would have fewer anglers, and so we would see less of that federal money coming our way. It's about $4 per angler that we would lose, and so there would be an additional loss of $128,000. So the total impact there to the fund from the from exempting the 16 and 17-year-olds is about $782,000. As Senator Chaudhry mentioned, the unknown there is whether or not this does provide some additional opportunity for kids to get into fishing, and if they become licensed buyers in the future, that could at least partially offset that. On page 3 of the fiscal note, we've actually done some modeling here in Minnesota, and other states have done the same sort of modeling, and you can predict with some confidence that as you raise fees, you'll see some drop-off in participation. And based on those models, We've actually calculated that this $4 increase in fees will result in a loss of about 48,000 anglers. As Senator Chaudhry mentioned, it's possible and actually likely that many of those anglers will likely come back as those new fees become a reality, and we really don't have any way to estimate or model that. But the fiscal note does take into the account that we would lose revenue from the loss of those 48,000 anglers, not only the licenses they're buying, but again the federal aid impacts at $4 per angler that we'd lose as a result of that. So the end result here would be that in the first full year, FY12, with the new fees in place and going forward into FY13 and 14, we'd expect to raise approximately an additional $1.7 million annually to the fund. Finally, maybe just three concerns that I could express about the legislation here. One is Senator Chaudhry mentioned this imbalance between hunting and angling and the fact that we're currently spending about $4.8 million more on fisheries programs than we're bringing in from all sources of angling-related revenue annually. And that's a big number. The Budget Oversight Committee that's established in statute that reviews the Game and Fish Fund has taken a close look at this, and as Senator Chaudhry mentioned, they've recommended that this be rectified through a fishing license fee increase. The concern we've got is that this bill and this increase only gets us about a third of the way there, and so it doesn't really bridge that gap. And as has been discussed here, it's unpopular and not easy to look at fee increases. We've only had 7 fishing license fee increases since 1970. It's not a real common thing that we do. It's a very difficult thing that when we do it. And there's a concern here that if we do this but really don't fix the revenue problem, that we've lost an opportunity that we might not be able to go back to for some time. The second concern are the increased agent surcharges in Section 5 of the bill. It would increase the fee that those folks out there selling licenses for us around the state would receive for most licenses. It would increase from $1 to $2. We've got a network out there of about 1,600 small businesses around the state that actually have terminals and sell licenses for us. This additional $1 would be charged to the anglers at the time they buy their license. We would never see that money come to DNR. It would just be kept by the agent out there. And so the actual license fee increase that's reflected here is the $4 plus the additional $1. We do hear from some of our agents that they'd like to see that fee increased. But we also have a number of agents that are willing to do it for the $1 fee or even donate that service. We've got a waiting list of businesses that want to sell licenses because of the extra business it brings in and because their customers kind of expect that when they're there doing other business that they also be able to buy a license. And we're looking at ways through some technology to make sure that all those folks are able to sell licenses. But the point is, we do have folks that are willing to do it at the $1 fee. We've got a waiting list, and we're not sure the additional $1 is necessary. And then the third concern I'd express would just be the dedication to a stocking purpose that's reflected here. We do have a very robust stocking program in the state. In FY 2009, out of a $34 million total expenditure in our fisheries section, we spent about $7.5 million altogether on stocking programs. That's a very significant investment. We've actually held our stocking programs harmless as we've reduced other areas of our work in the fisheries section, mostly staff-related reductions out in the field offices, the 30 FTEs that have been referenced earlier. That's a real number. We've got 30 less fisheries biologist basically out in the field doing all the day-to-day work that's required to manage this fishery. And so we think dedicating this funding for stocking really kind of ties our hands. It reduces flexibility in the future. And quite honestly, we don't believe we need to do more stocking than we're doing now. We believe the stocking we're doing it in the right places and the right amounts to really provide that return to the angler. And the stocking that we're doing now, I think, is at the appropriate level where we do get that good return, and we're using these public dollars in what we feel is the best possible fashion. We do have advisory committees and budget oversight committees that review these expenditures, review these programs, and work with us very closely. And certainly, if they believe we're going the wrong way on stocking, we'll certainly hear about it, and I'm sure you will as well. So we don't think this dedication is necessary, and really unnecessarily reduces flexibility for us to address the highest priority fisheries needs out there in future years.
All right, thank you, Mr. Shad. Do you, in order to get the Dingell Johnson, the federal matching dollars, does there have to be a certain dollar amount, or if you charged a dollar for the license, could you still get that matching money?
Madam Chair, the federal rules require that we charge at least $1 for a license for a person to be counted as an angler. It also requires that we at least capture the costs of issuing that license. And so we've estimated, and this changes based on what our ELS costs are and that sort of thing, but it's somewhere between $2 and $3. We would need that license cost in order to capture those federal dollars.
And do you know if any other states offer free licenses for 16- and 17-year-olds? Is that common or unusual?
Madam Chair, we haven't looked at that. I'm not sure.
Senator Chaudhry, any idea on that?
Not sure, Madam Chair.
I wonder if it would be, fiscally a little more prudent to just charge a real reduced rate for a youth fishing license. I mean, I understand what you're trying to do, and I really support your goal of trying to bring more young people in. You know, if it was $5 or $4, it would be kids, that's nothing. Kids these days, you know, they don't know the value of the money the way we used to. You know, I give them a $20 bill, and they're like, "Oh, that's nothing." Yeah.
Madam Chair,
if we charge $5 or $4, we could bring in, you said, $700,000 a year in federal. I'm sorry, what was the number?
It would, Madam Chair, it'd be $4 per angler, $32,000. It'd be about $125,000 of federal funds.
I don't know where I got the $700. I was dreaming.
Senator Chaudhry. I've thought about that, and the simplicity's taking cleanliness of our kids kind of fishing approach. I'd rather see that $600,000 made up on the non-residents. And that we've still got a lot more room in that to be even the non-residents to be even coming close to other neighboring states. I think that's where I would give my brothers, that's where I would see us changing this bill to make up the fiscal impact.
And I think we do need to look at the long-term getting out of this hole, and we got to figure out the best way to get there. So I think we all share that goal. All right. I had Senator Fredrickson. Did you, Senator Torres Ray? Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, you actually asked the question that I was going to ask, what the minimum amount was for to attract the Dingell Johnson monies. As I recall, when we had a reduced senior citizen license, I think we were charging $4.
Okay.
I also know we want to be sure we want to have a reduced license or a free license before we do it, because that's a really tough fee to unwind and impose again once you start giving people free licenses.
That is true. That is a good point. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I hate when we bring personal issues to the table, but I just happen to have two adolescents, and we like to go fishing in several places, and they don't want to go with us anymore. And so now we are debating whether or not we should have these licenses in the South, in Florida, and here, and all of that, since they don't want to go fishing with us. And so I think that having children from the ages 16 to 18 with, you know, without a license is a good thing, because they really don't want to do this with their parents. So it's an incentive for us to bring them along and go fishing, because we really must do this. They, you know, I think these declining statistics are very real. And so I really think that's a very strong piece of this legislation. We need, I was thinking, in fact, that actually 21 should be the age, because at 18 is when they begin to go by themselves and really think about fishing and loving the lakes and doing without us. And so I think 21 should be the age, in my opinion.
Senator Torres Ray, are you suggesting if you have to buy a license for your kids, you might not even go fishing, or you might not buy your license either?
We will not for, I mean, they will come with us, but, you know, they will probably do the fishing, and, you know, we will have to say no to fishing if they don't have the license and we didn't purchase. But since we don't know when they're going to want to come with us, and most of the times they don't go, so I think many parents may think twice about, do I get this license or not, since they are not coming. So if that's not in the equation anymore, they are going with us and they are going to go fishing, and I think that's a good thing.
Senator Bach.
Well, Madam Chair, kind of along Senator Torres Ray's line of thinking, Senator Chaudhry, have you ever thought of, and I view the world differently now, I'm at a different point in life, I'm now a grandparent, and so I'm just thinking about my little grandson Benjamin someday calling me and saying, Grandpa, would you take me fishing?
You can't fish.
And maybe he's 8 or maybe he's 10 or 12. But what if Grandpa doesn't have a fishing license? Have you ever thought about maybe instead of it's always take a kid fishing, that maybe the kid, maybe we somehow should encourage the kid that maybe somebody that can drive, maybe a grandparent or an uncle, shouldn't have to have a license to take the kid fishing. That just a, you know, we're always stuck in the take on a kid fishing thing or take a kid hunting. But, you know, as we run license prices up and up and up over time here, there will be a point that seniors decide, well, you know, I'm probably only going to go once anyway or twice, you know, or so maybe I won't go. And just maybe. And I'm just wondering if you had ever thought about that. I only thought about it recently when I thought about having a grandson, that someday he's going to call me and say, Grandpa, would you take me fishing? My dad's at work. And maybe, you know, as licenses go up in price, maybe fewer and fewer grandparents or grandmothers will have them, and we'll miss some opportunity there. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of the other side of the coin of where we've always been in that paradigm of thinking about the parent takes the kid, but maybe there's another side to that. When, you know, parents seem to be living awful busy lives, a lot of them working two jobs, and the opportunities aren't there for kids maybe how they used to be, because parents maybe are busier trying to provide for the family's needs. But just something I'd like you to think about. I just kind of thought about it in the last few months. Is never really thought about it until I became a grandparent myself, and I envision getting that phone call someday. Because I used to call my grandpa. My mother will tell you.
It might be a knock on the door. You never know.
And I would sit waiting on the porch, waiting for my grandma and grandpa to come to take me to Black Duck Lake. And we went fishing, and my parents were working. Mm-hmm. But as we run fees up, I think we need to be cognizant of that right. There are a lot of grandparents who really provide a lot of opportunity for young people. We just want to make sure as we run fees up that they're able to continue to do that.
Madam Chair,
Senator Chaudhry.
Senator Bach, that was one of the central arguments that I made in favor of your conservation license proposal, is that there are many people besides parents these days who are taking kids fishing, mm-hmm. and we should try and reduce those barriers as much as possible. And that's why we reduce the fee for not only, you know, the single mom or the single dad, but also the uncle or the grandparent, as you said, who has kind of taken up that role in the child's life, to reduce the barrier to that person too. And if we want to think about somehow structuring a way where you're somehow some sort of an apprentice method. Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree that I think the central point is that we've got that it is the adults that need to get more engaged. But I share the same story as Senator Torres Ray, because I have two teenage stepdaughters who I've tried with all my might to get into the outdoors, and short of hitting them over the head with a frying pan, almost. Well, one time I almost did.
That's worth a try.
And we went to, so I said, we're all going to go ice fishing. Oh, come on. I said, okay, you bring your friend with you. Oh, okay. And so during the day, we'll go ice fishing, and in the evening, we'll be in the hotel, and you can go swimming. Okay, great. So then I had the issue of deciding whether I was going to buy a license for this one time. But then her friend, she had to call. She didn't have her driver's license with her, so she was struggling trying to get a hold of her parents. She had to get her driver's license number so we could buy her a fishing license for that one time. This bill would completely eliminate that question. You just jump in, we go fishing. But yes, I mean, I agree with your premise. We ought to encourage it, figure out some mechanism to encourage more adults to take kids fishing.
Senator Rummel.
Madam Chair, this goes back to Senator Chaudhry's other comment about possibly picking up some fees from the out-of-state community. Do we have any sense of what percent of the fishing fund comes from out-of-state licenses?
Mr. Shad.
Madam Chair, right now about 27% of our fishing license revenue is derived from non-resident anglers. It's a smaller proportion of anglers with a higher fee, but of the revenue, it's 27% of the dollars.
And has that changed any since we last raised the non-resident fee? Have you seen any decline?
Madam Chair, I haven't looked at that recently.
All right. Okay. We've talked about the non-resident fees. We've talked about the youth licenses, the fish stocking. We haven't really talked about that. And so let me just ask the question. Senator Chaudhry, Mr. Shad raised the question of whether that's needed because they feel that they're fully stocking where stocking is appropriate. Are you seeing where do you want to have stocking? What's the problem that you're trying to solve with this?
I think the angling groups will tell you that they feel that more could be done and should be done, and that when that issue is raised, funding always enters the mix of the discussion. And this is only 10%, and if it's just designated towards fry, that's fine with me. But stocking is a perennial issue at the round table, and funding is always a part of that mix.
Mr. Ness, you're leaning forward. Did you want to say something quickly on that?
Chair, members of the committee, Lance Ness again, president of Anglers for Habitat. We had explored actually several possibilities of what to do with some of this money, including invasive species, aquatic habitat, and the stocking issue. So we were, looking, our groups basically just want to make sure the money is going to go to some specific useful purpose that is going to enhance our fisheries. So we did look at some other options. They didn't meet quite the criteria that we were looking for, and so we decided to go with the stocking issue as part of the increase. So that's where that ended up. But there was considerable discussion, I'd like the members to know, about invasive species and about aquatic habitat.
Well, and I also heard you talking about those 30 vacant positions. So maybe those are inconsistent with what, a specific kind of program, especially if we focus on the, buying the fish themselves. Which is the top priority? Buying the fingerlings or filling those staff positions or... Can you rank those for us?
Madam Chair, I don't know if I really want to rank those, but I think that, the department's down 30 positions in the fisheries department, and I think 40 in wildlife, that, it takes bodies to do the work. And sometimes you've got to get people out there that know their things. The department is well qualified. They have, biologists and hydrologists and fish and wildlife managers that, have degrees in what to do. But if they don't get out there and do the work, the improvements aren't going to be made. We've got to get people that know what they're doing and get them out there and do the right thing. And we're a national fishery here. People come from all over the country to fish Minnesota. We're well recognized that. We have great muskie, great northern, great bass, great walleye. And so we want to promote that as part of our tourism as well as our economic driver. I know there's a lot of discussion about jobs and the economy. But we want to keep people coming here. We want to keep people coming here to enjoy our great fisheries and take some pride in that. So I think bodies on the in the water is around the water is what we need.
All right. Thank you. Senator Rummel.
Madam Chair, this is a question that comes based on being on the Education Committee. And so often we hear the question, when we spend monies for this, that, or another program, how do we know that we're going to get the result or the outcomes we're looking for? And so I'm just wondering if you have an automatic way of tracking. If we're spending more dollars to get young people, let's say, involved or whatever, do you have a way of tracking that you've actually achieved those goals?
Mr. Shad.
Madam Chair, Senator Rummel, that's a good question and a good point. Kind of at a high level, the work we do is very, very heavily scrutinized. The Budget Oversight Committee process that I mentioned earlier, it was set up by the legislature to make sure that hunters and anglers, the licensed buyers, had an opportunity to review the books, basically, take a look at how we're spending the dollars that they're spending on their licenses. They produce a report every year based on our summaries that we provide them of the funding and how we use the dollars, and those are reflected in our budget and in the initiatives that we fund. And so there is a high degree of oversight to make sure that we're spending the money in the ways not only that the legislature intends, but also that the hunters and anglers desire. As far as tracking the actual outcomes from our work, that can be a little more challenging. Obviously, we can monitor the status of fish populations and wildlife populations. We can monitor the number of licensed buyers. And actually, with our electronic licensing system now, we know the age, we can make some estimates on the gender and even the race of some of our licensed buyers to just get at whether or not we are seeing any changes out there as a result of some of the recruitment efforts that we've got in place, for example. So we are looking at ways to better monitor and see if these programs, especially in this recruitment and retention area of our work, are really working. This is a new area of work for all of us. All across the country, fish and wildlife agencies are trying some things to get more hunters and anglers, especially young people, minority populations, women, more interested in hunting and angling. And we're kind of trying some things, developing best management practices, and trying to figure out what works best.
Senator Rummel.
Madam Chair, thank you. The reason I ask the question is because Senator Chaudhry began his testimony by saying folks wanted to dedicate, see where their money went. And so, and I agree mm-hmm. with him that it increases the credibility and the confidence mm-hmm. that our public has in the work we're doing. So any kind of tracking that actually shows, yes, we are making a difference, of course, mm-hmm. will strengthen that relationship we have with our public. So I appreciate it.
Yeah. Senator Rummel, I think it's a great point. You know, if we don't charge for youth fishing licenses, we won't really have that data. So that does make it more of a challenge to measure. But hopefully there's other ways that we can measure success if we move down that road.
And Madam Chair, this is the report that we issue every year on how we use the Game and Fish Fund dollars. This is the report that this Oversight Committee reviews. They make recommendations based on this report, and included in here, it's not only the dollars and which programs are funded, but some of the outcomes from those programs are reflected here as well. So we don't disagree that accountability is very, very important, especially with these fee-based programs and we're almost exclusively fee-based now, our fish and wildlife programs.
Senator Chaudhry.
Chair, I like the point Senator Rummel brings up as well. I don't think it would be hard to track the outcomes of a 16, 17-year-old free license. You just look at the number of licenses that are sold at age 18. Are those going up or down or staying the same? I think that would be an easy indicator. But think of all the summer camps where you would no longer have to worry about a 16 or 17-year-old having to buy a license where they can. That that part of that barrier, that administrative issue, that even that monetary aspect is no longer there. You know, we're at the camp, jump in and go on the dock, grab a pole, go on the dock, and go fishing. I think it'll be really, really helpful. And this is a demographic, as they mentioned, that is declining.
All right. Thank you. That's been a very good discussion. Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, I was just kind of reacting to something Senator Chaudhry said about camps. I'm wondering if we should sell a camp license. So if somebody has a camp for 16-year-olds or the camp buys a license for the camp for whatever price we would set, that whatever campers came and participated in their program during that summer would be authorized to have their campers fish. Just responding to what you said, and I have nothing more to say than that.
All right. Thank you for the suggestion. All right. We're going to lay this bill over for consideration in one of our future bills, either Game and Fish or the Omnibus Bill. So Senator Chaudhry moves.
Can I get it into shape on stocking? Because I do think that if the intent is to try to get more stocking done, then we should tell the department they have to buy fry and fingerling with the money. Otherwise, there is no guarantee that fish stocking means you're going to get more fry or fingerling in the lake. So I think council has some oral language that I'd like to move.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, maybe you want to make sure to put yearlings in there too.
So does that mean they couldn't use any of that? We don't have your language here, and we're out of time. Is it ready to go? Because otherwise I'd say we'll just defer this to, we're going to be bringing this back later.
I have no problem working on it with you, okay. Senator Bach.
Yeah, I mean, my only question would be, does that mean you couldn't, it does take people to stock lakes too, and we've heard concern about people, so would that exclude any of that 10% going for people?
I'm sure that's what I'd like
Senator
to do.
Bach.
I mean, the point is the DNR fishery people are going out to the lake, and their budget limits how many fry or fingerling that they can put into the lake just for budgetary purposes. If the individual is making the trip out there to put in the fry or the fingerling, there's no additional labor cost in them dumping one more bucket in, except they're limited by the resources available in their budget to buy the additional fry or fingerling. So I don't think there's necessarily an additional labor cost if we direct them just to buy more fry and fingerling.
So you're not talking about additional lakes.
No.
You're just talking about more fish in the same lakes.
Could be. The department can determine that.
I think that's how you just described it. I mean, if it's different lakes, then it's going to take a little bit more than just a bucket of fish.
Well, I don't think I'm... Some lakes, Madam Chair, it doesn't make sense to stock. Some have plenty of natural reproduction. Every lake doesn't need to be stocked, but...
I'm going to ask if we could come back to this. Senator Bach...
I'll work on it with you.
We're not going to ignore this issue. We're going to bring this bill back when we have the Game and Fish Bill. So why don't we have this worked out, and if we need testimony, we can take it at that time. But we just need to move on, and we've got other places to go. So we'll defer that and come back to it. And Senator Chaudhry moves that Senate File
3044
be laid on the table for future consideration in this committee in an omnibus bill. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, and the meeting's adjourned.